Checking in again with us, State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy, who is back on the road again. Hey, Tacky.
Hey, Joe. We're living in a Zoom world, and apparently you can do this any place, anytime you want.
Our new theme song is going to be have to be on the road again if we keep this up much longer. But you're actually right here in the City of Presidents. Tell us a bit about what you were doing in Quincy today.
Well, today I was with Quincy Asian Resources, District Attorney Michael Morrissey, Senator John Keenan out in Germantown Neighborhood Center, passing out emergency whistles. That actually looks like this.
Oh, flip that over so we can read it better.
Yep, he's upside down.
There you go.
Live TV, folks. Don't get a second chance. So, as you can see from Quincy Asian Resources, and they're very simple whistles. And we were out passing out these in Germantown and went to O'Brien Towers in Crowley, called them and put some in the doors for folks. And it's a very simple device. All you're doing is see something, blow a whistle. If you're being assaulted or harassed or attacked, blow a whistle. It generally drives intruders away, but also more importantly, brings help to you in case of emergency. The incidents on Asian American attacks around the country has been rising. I do not believe anywhere is truly safe. One of the big things here is the fact that there's sneak attacks, essentially. The people who sneak up and attack a senior citizen or woman in particular, and you don't have time to screen. And other people, have to react, and you're not sure what to do. Whistle is an easy way to attract a lot of attention and scare off attackers. So, it's right now, obviously, people shouldn't be going anywhere by themselves. You move with other folks. But even then, as we saw in New York City, two women were attacked together with another woman with a hammer. Two senior citizens were attacked in broad daylight in San Francisco. Man came up and stabbed them both. So even if we're other folks, I think you need an additional measure that allows to attract attention. If something bad happens or you see something bad happen.
What did folks have to say about it at Germantown this morning, Tacky?
They were just very thankful to have a device, simple device like this that, frankly, I don't think a lot of people really think about something as simple as a whistle. We get caught up on our electronics and various types of, other things associated with our phones, or you're carrying, these beepers you have to push. A whistle is a low piece of technology. There's no batteries involved. It's very simple to use. And sometimes even, you see it there. I mean, it's easy to grab and put it around your neck. You don't have to reach in your pocketbook if you don't have to reach in your pocket and things like that. So, and this general concern with the community, people always say, this shouldn't be happening here. We live in the United States. It can't be this is going on. It's just tough right now. Philip at Quincy Resources, I got to give Philip a lot of ingenuity. He's actually pushed this out, not just in Quincy, but also in New York City and Los Angeles. So Quincy's name is actually in two different major cities, of which there's significantly higher attacks on Asian Americans. Just remind folks, just because we haven't seen a whole lot of it in media here, stop AAPI hate, stop AAPI website still puts us number 5 in most number of harassments and incidences against Asian Americans. And I was in WGBH's forum last night listening in, because I've been doing a lot of forum listening-ins. I did China Institute this week. I spoke at Bridgewater State and opening there on their forum, and now WGBH was listening last night. John Yang from AAJA, he's an Asian American Justice organization out of New York who does a lot of data tracking. SAP AIP data hasn't been released to the public yet, but what he does know is that the next report should show that Massachusetts has jumped from 96 reports as of March to over 200 reports as of now. So the greater awareness of the website, the greater awareness of people going on, that you can't just brush this off, you have to record this data, is greater awareness something is going on here. So, you think it can't happen here. Well, that's not true. We're greater level of diligence. And, I don't lie to folks. I live in the city of Quincy. I grew up in the city. And, very careful why I am traversing the city every day. Well, when I actually do go out, actually, we don't go out much, but when I do transverse, try to be careful.
We have seen some hate crimes charges filed now regarding the shootings in Atlanta. Does that offer some encouragement to you?
It does offer some encouragement, because I know it took a little while to get there, but the thing about that is the issue again of intent, right? If you say your intent is not racially biased and you say it's something else, then you try to escape the hate crime charge. And that was a legitimate fear by a lot of us in the community, where you can make your own excuse for a crime, essentially. And as long as you don't say it's racially biased or sexually biased or other types of protected classes, you can get away with that charge. So I'm very thankful that the law enforcement down there did look at the whole set of circumstances behind the crime to make a determination. Still, you got to make it stick. So we'll see what happens as we move down the road. We already know he's going to get, there's no way he's not getting convicted. Okay. He's getting convicted of eight murders, six Asian women, and two others. I mean, there's no way he's going to escape a murder charge. But, in our world, as people of color, the hate crimes charge isn't necessarily just an initial charge of a crime. It's to have confidence that we're being seen as a vulnerable population, which are currently being targeted. And I think this is kind of the thing that people keep thinking about hate crime. It's like, it's not about the criminal penalty itself, because it is a severe penalty. It's the fact that this group of folks are specifically targeting certain people to commit crimes against, because that's who they want to hurt specifically. The motive is just to hurt these specific people. And there are a smaller group of people, we're a very small minority group collectively in the United States, and it becomes a vulnerable target. So this is why looking at state hate crimes law is becoming very important, to see if we can avoid the sex addiction motive. Not allow the perpetrator to create their own intent, so it doesn't look like it's a hate crime charge. And then it dismisses the fact that, you're a vulnerable population. So, and people are like, oh, we don't do this before. Well, I was talking to the DA about this. If you attack a senior citizen, it's automatically an extra charge.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because seniors are a vulnerable population. You're targeting a vulnerable population. So if you say that, well, you shouldn't have that charge, you should charge like everybody else. Well, that means they're going to pick seniors more, because there's no charge. At some point, people are going to figure this out. And when they figure out that you got a vulnerable population to commit crimes against, to rob, to hurt, to murder, or for whatever sick motives, it just increases that specific target.
Yep. Yep.
If you don't believe in hate crimes, get rid of the, increased penalties for attacking a senior citizen. Same argument.
Does it give you a better understanding about how, say, Black people might feel when it comes to their relationship with the police?
Well, the Asian community police is a little bit different from Black people. We all were horrified by George Floyd. There isn't anybody I talked to that wasn't like, this is outrageous. As I've spoken before in the past, it's really about government coming to you and communication, understanding. So, when you're in a position of power, and contrary to popular belief, legislators are not that big a position of power. I mean, I'm not executive branch. But when you're in a position of power, you have the ability to understand the people you work for, the public you serve. So, and same thing in big corporations. So you're a CEO, you're a COO, you're a manager. You're in a position of power, and you should be able to understand the people that are working for you. So, it's with us, it's more of an issue of, if we call you, will you come? If you call us, will you actually help us? Do you understand what's going on? And, please don't arrest us because we don't speak English.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's happened around the country, where if you don't speak English and police showed up, they assume the perpetrator is the person that doesn't speak English.
Hmm.
And we're still subject to racial profiling. So people under some false perception that we're white. We're not white. I mean, our friends that in wealthier communities in Massachusetts share stories with me of how they've been harassed in public forums, harassed by employers. And these are wealthy white communities they live in. They've had incidents of racial profiling where they just assume, that one Chinese, Korean, Japanese, whomever on that block in this report of the crime has to be that one person standing there, because why wouldn't it be? Right. So, I mean, my friends, tell me that, it is not uniquely a Black issue, but it does depend on where you are in terms of mm-hmm. where you stand out. With us in law enforcement, it's also whether or not you're going to listen to us. And spend the time to understand the culture. I mean, I've said this before and I'll say it again. While we're afraid of, we come from authoritarian society, so we're afraid of law enforcement. I grew up here. I'm not all that comfortable either because of things that were happening when I was a child.
Mm.
So, I mean, if that's the excuse, what about the children who are born in this country and that have concerns about police? We didn't come from authoritarian societies. So, I mean, it's a continuation of the whole, you have to do something so government can do something for you. Now, listen to those words I said. So those people who are listening to this, watching this call, are thinking to themselves, have you actually had to do something different for yourself so the government will actually listen to you?
Yeah. Well, it's a way to introspect and get a sense for where you're coming from, you know, when you ask yourself that question, right?
Yeah. I mean, you think about your life, how many times you had to do anything? What did you have to change about the way you talk, the way you speak, the language, you know, what have you ever had to do to change how government responds to you?
Yeah. Nothing, honestly, I can say, yeah, personally, nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I can tell you, your forefathers probably did, or were ignored by the government.
Yeah.
The Italians were not well received in Massachusetts when they arrived as immigrants, and they didn't speak English. I promise you that the government was not exactly forthcoming for them. But again, you know, that was a different time, and we were thinking much more advanced since then, learning lessons from your father, your grandfather, your great grandfather. But have we?
Takes generations, probably, to make change. Yeah.
Yeah, or, you know, people like me who are just making people uncomfortable suddenly think about this stuff, right?
Speaking of, there are some measures on Beacon Hill to this effect. Maybe you can tell us a bit about those.
Well, the governor actually had the opportunity to actually listen to the governor speak one day, and he actually believes that we may reach herd immunity numbers by end of June if mm-hmm. things continue the way they are. You know, we're closing in on 3 million people fully vaccinated, which, I'll be frank with you, I'm surprised given how rough the rollout was at the beginning, lack of supply, scheduling problems, non-centralized system, a lot of confusion, who had vaccine, who didn't. Despite it all, it is the month of May and vaccine really rolled out at the end of January, early February. So, you know, essentially just under 5 months, mm-hmm. We're looking at almost 3 million people fully vaccinated. Congratulations, everybody.
Just yesterday, Quincy switched into the green category on the risk assessment map. So there's definite progress.
There's definite progress. So, you know, thank you, everyone. Very much so. Beyond just wearing a mask and social distancing and you know, try to keep safe and clean and, you know, everything else. I mean, thank you for getting vaccinated. I honestly thought because of the nature of our decentralized healthcare system, no clear federal guidance components, supply chain issues, snowstorms stopping trucks from getting here, this would be a longer, taller haul, especially with the 2 shots. But no, thank you to everybody on listening here that, you know, your participation makes a huge difference on perhaps returning to a greater normality. You know, July 4th may not be out of the question on maybe not full normal, but even 75% normal. You can see your loved ones safely at home. You may be able to go out to dinner, maybe not a full capacity restaurant, but closing in, you know, larger capacity. And, you know, now, you know, we can, you know, spend time outdoors without a mask on and, you know, close proximity to people you know. So
yeah, CDC is changing the mask guidelines as we speak. So there's definite signs of improvement for sure across the country.
And this week we can say zero deaths.
That's right.
I do not remember the last time you and I have chatted and talked about zero deaths in 1 week.
No, I think you're right. So, you know, a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel for sure.
It absolutely is. I mean, we're over 17,500 people passed on in Massachusetts that we have confirmed is COVID related. And we finally have a week of the pandemic where we have no deaths that is COVID related confirmed. That's an achievement. That's an achievement of everybody involved in healthcare, pharmacies, obviously the state and city governments. But most importantly, you know, you watching this made this happen, not me. I mean, you know, we and Joe here did our part, you know, we got our vaccines, but to me, it's, you know, up to you watching us to take initiative to do it yourself.
Has there been any discussion about getting back into the state house, Jackie?
No, we're still thinking it's going to be a fall opening. Right now, we actually had another chat with my co-chair, Sue Moran, on the committee about hearings. We're going to go virtual hearings. First test run is going to be some very home rule petitions, not a very controversial public hearing next Thursday, on the 20th, around 1 p.m. If you go to the legislature's website, you can see the posting up for Consumer Protection Professional License first hearing. So the plan is, like we did in the fall, we're still, Zoom has changed on us. So technology's changed yet a bit again on us. So we are taking some lessons from the fall and applying it to next week's hearing on a very light hearing schedule to see how it works. And if it's successful, we'll add more to the schedule and then we'll make the hearings a little bit more complicated, a little bit at a time, every single hearing, probably almost weekly in this format. And if things get weird on technology, then we'll stop and reassess. As you can tell, we're trying to be very sensible about this because we obviously want to make it public. We're trying our best to make it video available on Facebook mm-hmm. Live. We do have a public Facebook website. You do not have to join Facebook to look at my Facebook. It's not a requirement. And provide the recordings with the State Legislative Information Services, the recordings of the Zoom videos to them, unedited. So if I say something, not smart, well, we can't do anything about it.
It lives on forever.
Lives on forever, just like this. So, but also we have to remind folks that are testifying, you are going to be recorded.
Yep.
Because people have gotten used to public hearings where you come in, you speak, but the government itself is not recording the hearing. So, these are kind of new additional steps as we kind of been learning how to do this we have to remember to tell folks that, you're going to be recorded. And by the way, people are going to see it. So, you're going to say something, be very conscious of what you're going to say. If it's a sensitive matter, you may want to provide it in writing as opposed to saying it in the internet.
Right.
Things like that. So we're really thinking very hard about that kind of stuff right now. And then if we get back into building in September, which is our hope, perhaps, we can start holding in-person public hearings. And there may be some restrictions because the rooms don't have ventilation, they're very cramped. But maybe we can start some in-person hearings that we can engage more panel discussions. I don't know your experience when trying to do panel discussions in this format, but it's a lot of pausing and unable to go with flow.
You really need somebody who's very good at multitasking to moderate. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we will have to get to do some. Yeah, you're right. So eventually we're going to have to do some more panel hearings, and it is much easier in person when you can engage in that dialogue. And don't forget, I have to manage a committee membership. Mm-hmm. There's 17 members on the committee. I got 11 on my side, and the members will have questions. And this format makes it very difficult because you don't intentionally interrupt, but who's supposed to say what when.
Right. Can you bring us up to date on the AAPI legislation, Tacky?
Sure. The caucus is still working their way through a number of different issues. We're actually holding an event at the State House to do an Asian History Forum. We have three professors coming in Asian studies to give the membership, essentially a crash course in some Asian American histories and tie it to why, there's things in this culture in this country that is inherently anti-Asian and spills as systemic racism that frankly none of us think about until you actually start pointing it out to people and think about what's going on, right? And that's an important education for the State House. We are still waiting for hearings on bills that we endorsed. The disaggregation bill, what I call the data equity bill, still waiting for a hearing, as well as ethics studies in schools and also parity on boards and commissions for ethnic and women to be on government boards and commissions. So, stuff is just waiting for a hearing. I talked about stuff we've done in the budget regarding studying Asian racism and helping some cultural centers out. There's some funding. The Senate is starting their budget. They've not put any of these provisions in. Mm. There are no, we don't have a real advocate still. I know Sonia Chang Diaz, takes the title as the first Asian American elected to the legislature. It's up to her initiative. I'm in the House. I can't tell her what to do.
Right.
One would hope that she's monitoring the situation and communicates. But again, I can't make anybody do anything I want to do. So again, I'm not executive power, folks. It's not like I can order people around. So we'll see how that goes in the Senate. And And then, you know, if the Senate doesn't do it, we'll go to conference committee, and hopefully the Senate will see the House's position on trying to address AIP issues this year. We actually, here's an interesting one. I did have a meeting with the National Conference State Legislators AAPI caucus last week. Actually, after this call, I had one later in the day where we have about 15 plus Asian legislators around the country, the state legislators. We had Congresswoman Chu and Congresswoman Meng on the call, updating us about the federal hate crimes law they put out there. And it's, you know, titled Anti-Asian COVID. It's really about better hate crimes reporting and providing resources to law enforcement at the county, municipal, and state level to beef up their reporting mechanisms so we get data faster on hate crimes. So it was actually a very interesting conversation and got some perspectives from my colleagues in other states what's going on. For example, some states have already moved forward on expanding ethnic studies in K-12 to include other ethnic groups. And their challenge now is not necessarily you don't want to do it. The challenge is finding the right textbooks to do it.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So some of the stuff is not about desire. It's just certain mechanics, practical world stuff that we need to do to make it happen. And it's not insurmountable.
It didn't exist, right? You have to create a curriculum. I look at it as, I don't want to say a silver lining in a pandemic, but at least an introspection due to the pandemic and maybe, you know, progress forward out of this.
You're absolutely correct. You know, it's trying to make the best of the situation you have. I mean, for example, pandemic has taught us telemedicine is the best thing now. I mean, I'm Atrius Healthcare. They've indicated they want to use telemedicine more often. You know, legislature passed a healthcare bill last December, waning nights of session that codifies a lot of things we've done in telehealth. So, yeah, it's been horrible 16 months. But at the same time, though, we've learned some lessons, and these lessons can be applied in the future. Unfortunately, you know, we had George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter movement, and now we have anti-Asian hatred going around the country. Again, you know, it's a tragic situation, which again, we're trying to find ways to move forward to be better people coming out of it, not just ignore it and add like, oh, well, it's just going to pass. And, you know, people keep asking me, you know, how much longer is this Asian hate going to continue? I'm like, well, I'm going to tell you it's probably going to be 2022 before we see some major subside because it hasn't peaked. I don't think they understand. We haven't peaked on this anti-Asian hatred. It's just been building through 2020 and it's, you know, rising 21 because you think it peaked, it should have been the Atlanta spa shooting should have brought greater awareness. You know, people should cut this out, you know, or, you know, the Sikh shooting in Indianapolis. People don't even talk about the Sikh deaths there. You know, it hasn't reached a crescendo yet. I think we're still kind of, you know, rising here and eventually hopefully things will calm down as things change. You know, I'm just not optimistic in the short term.
Hmm. We talk a little bit about the governor said he's going to continue the additional unemployment federal benefits through September. I know some other states are opting to bow out of that program. What do you think?
Yeah, it actually creates an interesting question because, you know, not every state is the same. Not every geographic region is the same. The cost of living is different everywhere, right? So we've talked about this before regarding, the stimulus check. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're living in, Little Rock, Arkansas, that $1,200 goes a long way. You're living in downtown New York, Manhattan, that $1,200 doesn't take you very far, right? It's a matter of where you are. And unemployment benefits falls in those same lines. You know, how much further does it go depending on your cost of living and your situation? So, yes, I've heard from, you know, what y'all have heard, the same thing on the news, the pandemic. Assistance is greater than what they're making at work, so it's hard to attract people back. But some people have moved on. They're not going back to the restaurant or other hospitality services because they fear COVID, as well as the fact they couldn't wait to have those industries open. So, you know, they've moved on. And then, you know, some people just left.
Yep.
And they just left the state. They, you know, went someplace else with their unemployment money to try to start anew somewhere else. So, you know, I think it's a little unfair blaming it totally on the unemployment benefits. That's causing the work shortage. It is one major factor, but there are other major factors as well. I mean, health and safety of yourself and your family is a driving force of why people do what they do. We saw this in the legislature. Some people made some late minute decisions on retirement because of those reasons. And I fully expect a lot of people in their late 50s, mid 60s, reevaluating whether or not they should get into retirement ahead of their schedule because, I don't know, death.
It's like, you know, I'm going to get it before I lose it, right?
Well, yeah, because, you know, obviously life priorities kind of start to shift around, right?
Right.
So, you know, the government not taking away the $300, you know, extra a month into September, you know, it's interesting because, you know, there is that shortage of workforce now, but it may not solve it entirely in different locales. So, for example, if you're in the Cape, you're going to have a boom year in the Cape, right? Yeah. But to commute from Boston or Quincy to the Cape to work, you know, that you have to actually find a place to live down there.
Right.
Right. Now you got the whole, are you vaccinated? Who are you living with?
Yeah.
Right. And places like the Cape takes a lot of J1, I think they're called J1 employees, the temporary employees from other countries. Well, one, you know, not to be under the Republican administration, but the American administration made it difficult already to get the J1s. So if people are talking about workforce shortages from outside the country, you know, that was from the prior administration that this administration hasn't quite resolved yet. Secondly, we don't know what the condition is in those countries that are unvaccinated.
That's right. Yeah.
The employees want to assume the responsibility of having to vaccinate and quarantine and go through all that, the employees that come in here from out of country. And how did they get to the country? There is not a lot of flying going on, folks.
Not international, right. Yeah.
Not international. I mean, there's a lot of question marks whether these international flights will be coming back online at all in 2021. They may not come back online until late 2021 or perhaps sometime in 2022.
Right.
So even getting these people to come here is a big challenge. So people are going to ask, why don't we, you know, get rid of employment and then benefits and then, you know, people in Boston and region will go work in the Cape and others. That makes sense until, again, how are you going to get there?
And yeah, and then the cost of living on the Cape is not cheap either.
And not during the tourist season, right?
That's right.
And it's a temporary housing situation for you trying to figure it out. So it's also like in wealthier communities. Like I remember one time I did a tour at Pembroke for a small business tour, and we stopped in the bakery there and we talked about, you know, what's going on. They said, we have a labor shortage. So I'm like, oh, what's going on? Oh, we'll pay, you know, more than minimum wage. Someone comes sweep the floors and do some of the backroom stuff. I'm like, oh, that sounds good. I mean, you know, and if you offer me more than minimum wage, when I was 16, 17, I'd jump on a heartbeat and learn some job skills. And he goes, well, we can't get anybody here. I was like, why? Because the kids don't need to work.
They don't need to work. Oh, because they're from wealthy families.
Yeah. They're from wealthy families. So as a working class kid from Quincy, you know, who...
Yeah, that doesn't register when you hear that, right? It's
like, it didn't click in my brain. I'm like, what do you mean kids don't have to work? What do you mean you don't need to, you know, pay your own anything? As a kid who paid through school himself and all that, I'm kind of like... looking at it like, huh?
Right.
And again, this is kind of the, you know, city mouse, country mouse, I suppose, mentality, or, you know, blue collar, not really blue collar, but I mean, a kid that would jump in a buck, you know, versus kids that don't have to.
Right.
And so you have like these wealthier communities that do not have public transit access, who are actually having workforce shortages also. And it's because their own neighborhood doesn't need the jobs. So, I mean, if, you know, somehow we could get a program for kids in Quincy, for example, that are somehow to get, you know, affordable transportation to a wealthier community, you know, even if it's a 45-minute, one-hour commute to work in affordable transportation, I mean, you know, I can tell a kid that had summer jobs, I mean, you know, that makes a lot of difference in the world.
Interesting, yeah. So it's interesting how opportunities are created by circumstances, you know, for different classes of folks.
Well, it's even me traveling around the state, you know, over the many years now, it seems like forever. And, you know, people know me, I'll listen to you. I mean, you grab me, I'll sit and listen for a while. But it's interesting perception, right? I mean, the Quincy kid, you know, grew up in a two parent working family, immigrant family, with no daycare access, like a lot of families in Quincy when I was a child. Trying to figure out how to manage, you know, work shifts with two kids. And then, you know, very careful with their money. People know I'm very careful. And then, you know, when I got to, you know, high school age and then college age, I mean, you know, I worked all summer and it was like, you're going to offer me money to do something? I'm like, yes. And then I hear that happen down in Pembroke. I'm like, what?
Right.
Yeah. You know, and it's this, again, it's this talking, learning process as part of my job, you know, to talk to folks, you know, in different communities as well as my own. And as you know, I like to travel more than I have in the past because, you know, I'm still afraid of flying, but I'm less afraid than I used to be. Mm-hmm. And whether going on vacation or visiting other countries, learning about their government system and their business systems, you know, it changes the perception of the world. And you know, I can contextualize things and talk about things like, you know, $300 extra unemployment benefits. Okay, let's think our way through this conversation as opposed to saying, oh, we gave them too much money. We take the money away, they're going to go to work.
Right.
Let's talk our way through this like we're doing here. And then you suddenly realize, yeah, okay, that makes sense in Quincy or Boston, but it may not solve the problem in Cape Cod. It may not solve a problem in a wealthier community.
No, it may actually do more harm than good, actually, right?
It may do some harm and good in certain locales.
Yeah.
So I think people have this habit of just kind of like, you know, brush stroke the whole thing, or it's like put a sledgehammer and answer. But, you know, you spend some time listening and talking and thinking, yes, but have you looked at these scenarios too?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I want to hear about your new baseball career, Jackie.
Well, oh, the Asian American Caucus, the House Asian American Caucus members will be at Fenway Park this Sunday for the 110 game. We're going to be given a presentation before the game by the Red Sox regarding their addressing AAP issues as well as the AAP hate issues as part of a larger program in their business franchise. So I don't know even call it Red Sox. They're not really, they're like they're part of the family. It's like, you know, part of their operations and, you know, also discussing, you know, things they can do beyond the month of May on AIPI. And they want to recognize the, you know, the Asian caucus as a part of the home opener. And I was instructed by my friend over there that I have to throw a ball. So we'll see what end up on YouTube under most embarrassing moments. Or maybe I actually will miraculously do this correctly and we will not become a YouTube a sensation. For the wrong reasons. So, but it's a privilege to do so. It's great to be recognized, and especially in AIP month, AIPI month, where you know, last year was lost to pandemic. This year is still in pandemic, but not as bad. But we're, you know, under this cloud of talking more about bad things happening to our communities as opposed to celebrating the wonderful things we bring to a community. So it's nice to be recognized and have something a little more positive to talk about, at least for one afternoon.
Just get it over the plate. That's all. Doesn't have to be a strike. Just get it over the plate.
I was reminded of professional catchers. They can catch things.
That's right. But don't be afraid. Give it all you got.
Well, I don't know if it's televised. I've done organized first pitches for the Taiwanese government a couple of times, so I don't know how it works.
Right.
So it may not be televised. They do multiple first pitches as part of a day. So don't expect to see me on TV, folks. But if you're at Fenway, you know, was it 50% capacity seating?
Yes.
You know, you're playing space of social distance, and I hear it's going to be a wonderful weather game. So,
yes.
You know, but, you know, I'm trying to picture if I fumble or I fall on my face, the staff's going to have to take phone calls on that. So, no, I'm not joking. I had to find a baseball yesterday and throw it to one of my staffers that live in Quincy just to show what it would look like before we go down there.
A little practice run, yeah. the whistles, Tacky, that Quarry is handing out, can folks still get those at other places?
Yes. I mean, Quincy Asian Resources has it. We're going to drop it off probably at different locales. You know, obviously, Quincy Asian Resources website, you know, Quincy Asian Resources Inc., just Google it, it comes up. I have some with me in my car. They gave me a few hundred that hold on to that I can drop off with folks in different places. And, you know, there are options out there on getting them. So if people are looking for it, you know, check the website. Boom, I found just a bit because it just told me that the sun is getting to the phone. So I'm moving it down just in there. The warning light came on. You know, obviously you can call the office 617-722-2200 is the office.
No, 2014.
I'm sorry, 2014. 617-722-2014. Yep. Or email me. You know, I've been known to drop things at people's homes if you're looking for a whistle. I'll just drop in the cover at night, so to speak, and just leave it inside your door and move on. you know, we can do that. And but I mean, there were, you know, Germantown today, they're working with the Y, you know, Philip and the office folks, they're organizing, trying to put some places and locations where people just pick up and go.
All right. I will I'll let you go before you fade out on us.